Good afternoon. It's good to see all of those who are willing and able to come back this afternoon to study another portion of the Word of God. As you can probably tell from my voice, I'm still dealing with a cold and cough. So I probably will not talk for very long. I have been covering in the afternoon lessons that I've been giving the book of Judges. And tonight, or this afternoon, for a brief time, I'd like to talk about the 12th and 13th book of the book, 12th and 13th chapter, excuse me, of the book of Judges. Much of the time that we see in the book of Judges, we realize that Israel is kind of a divided country. We know that later on in their history, after they asked God to make them a king, and God had no plans for them to have a king, but he eventually gave them the monarchy that they wanted, and that led them into many great disasters, including after two of the best kings that they had, David and Solomon. When Solomon became old and had to turn his kingdom over, his sons fought over who was going to be the king, and they ended up dividing the kingdom of Israel into two different groups. The 10 of the tribes went north and became known as Israel, and Judah and Benjamin stayed in Jerusalem or around Jerusalem, and they became known as Judah. And so they had two different kings, and the 10 tribes were not worshiping correctly, and we saw all the trouble that got them into. But the book of Judges takes place before that time. The book of Judges, the judges were the lead, kind of the interim leaders between the time that Joshua passed away until the time that the kingdom is established in Israel. Judges were used by God to kind of get the people back under control after they had strayed away from the things that God would have them to do. And we see that a lot of the stories that we find in the book of Judges are not about Israel as an entire nation. Usually it's the judges are chosen out of a particular tribe to address the particular issues that are causing them to go astray. So we see that even though Israel was supposed to be a combined nation, they weren't. It was almost a modern way to understand that is if the United States, we seem to have a lot of problems in this country, as blessed as we are with the government and different factions of it not getting along and whatnot. But it would be as if the states had broken away from the federal government, and we're all kind of operating on their own and not really cooperating with one another. That's kind of the situation that you have in Israel at the time of the judges. The last time we spoke, or I spoke to you, we talked about Jephthah, who was one of the judges that was chosen by God. And at the end of the 11th chapter of Judges, we see kind of an unusual thing. Unusual situation presents itself where Jephthah has gone to God. He's battling against the Ammonites, and he has made a vow to God that if God allows him to win this battle, that when he returns home, I'm going to read the verse from chapter 11, verse 31. This is what Jephthah, this is the vow that Jephthah made to God. Then it shall be that whatsoever cometh forth out of the doors of my house to meet me, when I return in peace from the children of Ammon, shall surely be the Lord's, and I will offer it up for a burnt offering. So he makes this vow, and he says, whatsoever cometh forth from his house. And he's likely thinking that when he returns home from this battle, if God allows him to live, that some animal's going to come running out of the house to greet him. And it turns out when he gets home, it's his daughter that comes out. And so we realize that God condemned human sacrifice. The Jews constantly got in trouble throughout their history until the time that Jesus came for following various pagan religions that were around them. They were always drawn away from God into these pagan forms of worship, and many times this involved actually sacrificing their young children to idols. They would take the child down to a valley where this metal idol had been made, and a fire was built inside it, and they would literally sacrifice their children to this idol. And so we know that God did not accept human sacrifice, and he was pretty particular about the kind of animals that he accepted as a sacrifice. So when Jephthah's daughter ran out, he was not obligated to offer her as a burnt offering, but she did agree to a sacrifice of a sword in that she would remain a virgin, and being his only child, this would mean that Jephthah would never have any heirs, which we see in other places in Judges. It's one of the only comments about some of the judges we're going to talk about this evening is the number of children that they had. So we know that this is something that they looked upon as kind of a status symbol, and so not to have any grandchildren and to see your line continued was the sacrifice that Jephthah made. And there's a lot of conjecture about what that all means, and it's in the grand scheme of things, we realize that God would not expect a human sacrifice to be made on his behalf. And so it makes sense that the sacrifice would be that she would sacrifice her life as her life of being a wife and a mother to honor her father's vow. And so when we begin in chapter 12, we're going to see some ramifications of this battle that Jephthah had with the children of Ammon, and how oftentimes you go to somebody and ask them for help, they don't help you, and then after your situation's over, then they come and say, why didn't you help me? And that's exactly what happens to Jephthah with regards to the Ephraimites, as we're going to read now in chapter 12, beginning in verse 1. And the men of Ephraim gathered themselves together and went northward and said unto Jephthah, wherefore passeth thou over to fight against the children of Ammon, and didst not call us to go with thee? We will burn thine house upon thee with fire. And Jephthah said unto them, I and my people were at great strife with the children of Ammon, and when I called you, ye delivered me not out of their hands. And when I saw that ye delivered me not, I put my life in my hands and passed over against the children of Ammon, and the Lord delivered them into my hand. Wherefore then are ye come up unto me this day to fight against me? Then Jephthah gathered together all the men of Gilead and fought with Ephraim, and the men of Gilead smote Ephraim, because they said, ye Gileadites are fugitives of Ephraim among the Ephraimites and among the Manassites. And the Gileadites took their passage of Jordan before the Ephraimites, and it was so that when those Ephraimites which were escaped said, let me go over, that the men of Gilead said unto him, art thou an Ephraimite? If he said, nay, then said they unto him, say now Sibboleth. And he said, Sibboleth, for he could not frame to pronounce it right. Then they took him, and they slew him at the passage of Jordan. And there fell at that time of the Ephraimites 42,000. And Jephthah judged Israel 6 years. Then Jephthah the Gilead, then died Jephthah the Gilead, and was buried in one of the cities of Gilead. So here we see that the Ephraimites come up to Jephthah and claim that he didn't seek their assistance in this battle, and now they're wanting to burn his house down with him in it because he didn't ask them for help. And so he ends up in a battle with them. Now, if you'll remember the way the tribes are divided up, Ephraim and Manasseh were the two sons of Joseph that counted as a half-tribe. Anytime you see the 12 tribes of Israel talked about, Joseph's tribe isn't named specifically as a tribe, but it's named as the half-tribes of Ephraim and Manasseh. And so these were the descendants of Joseph, and they were unhappy with the situation, so they decided to confront Jephthah about it, and he ended up in a war with them. And he commandeered a pass, and basically, this sounds like something you'd see in a movie or something, but what they would do is if these men tried to pass through their defenses, they had to pronounce a certain word, and the Ephraimites did not know how to pronounce this word correctly, and that's how they determined whether they were an Ephraimite or not. And if they couldn't say the word correctly, they would kill them. And all these things sound kind of strange to us, thinking about God as Christians and the love that God tells us that we're supposed to have for one another. But this was the way that God had the children of Israel behave in these days. And it demonstrates to us that God's very specific in how he wants us to behave and how he wants us to act and the things that he wants us to do. Judges chapter 12, verses 8 through 10. And after him, Ibzan of Bethlehem judged Israel, and he had 30 sons and 30 daughters, whom he sent abroad, and took in 30 daughters from abroad for his sons. And he judged Israel 7 years, then died Ibzan, and was buried at Bethlehem. Now, the Bethlehem it's talking about here is not Bethlehem of Judea, where Jesus was born and was known as the city of David. This is a city in a territory of Zebulun. Ibzan was from the tribe of Zebulun. And it doesn't really tell us why he was appointed as a judge by God, but we can discern from all the other appointments that we see is that the children of Israel had gone astray in some fashion, and he was appointed to lead them. It also sounds strange to us that someone would have this many children, have 60 children. That's quite a number of children to have, and quite a number of wives and concubines you would have to produce that many children. And so this is one of the things that makes a lot of people, consider the book of Judges somewhat different than the rest of the Old Testament. It's honest and it's brutal in its honesty sometimes of the way things happened back then, but it does tell us the story of God's people. And in this case, we see that this man was chosen as a judge, and he performed his duty that God had appointed to him. Judges 12, chapter 12, verses 11 and 12. And after him, Elon, a Zebulunite, judged Israel, and he judged Israel 10 years. And Elon, the Zebulunite, died, and he was buried in Ajalon in the country of Zebulun. So here again, another person who was important enough that their name was recorded in the Old Testament, and the fact that he was a judge, again, it doesn't tell us why he was appointed a judge, but certainly that's what God wanted him to do, and he got the people back in with God the way that they were supposed to be. And finally, finishing out the 12th chapter of Judges, verses 13 through 15, and after him, Abdon, the son of Heli, a Perithniite, judged Israel, and he had 40 sons and 30 nephews that rode on 70 ass colts, and he judged Israel 8 years. And Abdon, the son of Heli, the Perithniite, died, and he was buried in Paranthon in the land of Ephraim in the mount of the Amalekites. So earlier in this chapter we saw where the majority of the tribe of Ephraim had kind of revolted against Jephthah and brought a confrontation to him. But now we see that someone from the tribe of Ephraim has been raised to be a judge over the people at that time and to, again, get them back in line with what God wanted them to do. So in Judges chapter 13, we're going to read about probably one of the, is the beginning of the story of one of the most popular and well-known of the judges that we find throughout that book, and that, of course, is Samson. And Samson was from the tribe of Dan. And so we see that as we go through the studying the book of Judges, almost every tribe at one time or another was called upon to present a judge to lead the people. And again, this shows forth the idea that God intended for them to follow his rules and follow the commandments and the ordinances that he had given to Moses and to kind of self-govern themselves in that way. And they continued to reject the word of God and went about doing whatever it was that they wanted to do, as we're going to see as we begin to read chapter 13, beginning in verse 1. And the children of Israel did evil again in the sight of the Lord, and the Lord delivered them into the hand of the Philistines 40 years. And there was a certain man of Zorah, of the family of the Danites, whose name was Manoah, and his wife was barren and bare not. And the angel of the Lord appeared unto the woman and said unto her, Behold, now thou art barren and bearest not, but thou shalt conceive and bear a son. Now therefore beware, I pray thee, and drink not wine nor strong drink, and eat not any unclean thing, for lo, thou shalt conceive and bear a son, and no razor shall come on his head, for the child shall be a Nazarite unto God from the womb, and he shall begin to deliver the Israel out of the hand of the Philistines. Then the woman came and told her husband, saying, A man of God came unto me, and my countenance was like, and his countenance was like the countenance of an angel of God, very terrible. But I asked him not whence he was, neither told me his name. But he said unto me, Behold, thou shalt conceive and bear a son, and thou drink no wine nor strong drink, neither eat any unclean thing, for the child shall be a Nazarite to God from the womb to the day of his death. The word terrible here, when it describes the countenance of the angel In the King James translation of the New of the Bible, that word terrible is often used in a more accurate word to describe that Hebrew word in today's English would be awesome. It wasn't terrible as we think of something terrible as some being something horrible or disgusting. It was terrible as in amazing or awesome to behold. So keep that in mind when you're reading the King James translation. That sometimes these words have a very different meaning in the King James English than they do in modern English. And so the interesting thing about this situation is much like Mary and Abraham and Sarah, God promised that through an angel that this woman who had not been able to conceive a child would now have a child. And there was a very specific things that she was supposed to do. She wasn't supposed to eat or drink anything that came from a vine or to eat any animal that was unclean. And the angel told her this was because her child would be a Nazirite unto God from the womb. Now, in the Old Testament, there was a vow that men would take. They called it the Nazirite vow. It's when a man had committed to doing something, and most of the time this meant that he had some mission or some purpose that he had dedicated himself to God towards. When he set about on his task, he would no longer cut his hair or shave until that task was completed. And just as a side note, one of the things you might notice when you see paintings of that are supposed to represent Jesus, they show him with long hair and a beard because Jesus was called the Nazarene because he was from Nazareth, and people often confuse this with the Nazirite vow. And a lot of the Renaissance painters who came up with, who first started painting Jesus in that way, did it because they were confused about that. They were confused about what the Bible said when it called him a Nazarene. They assumed this meant that he also had taken a Nazirite vow. And if he had done that when he began his ministry 3.5 years later, by the time he was going to be crucified, he would have a pretty long hair and a substantially long beard. And that's why he's often depicted that way by people who, we don't know what Jesus looked like, but that's something interesting that I thought I would pass on to you. So anyway, the idea here was that Samson, as this child would come to be known, was not to cut his hair, and God had a very specific purpose for that, as we find when we get farther into the story of Samson. I'd like now to read verses 8 through 14. Then Manoah entreated the Lord and said, O my Lord, let the man of God, which thou didst send, come again unto us, and teach us what we shall do unto the child that shall be born. And God hearkened to the voice of Manoah, and the angel of God came again unto the woman as she sat in the field, but Manoah, her husband, was not with her. And a woman made haste and ran and showed her husband and said unto him, Behold, the man hath appeared unto me that came unto me the other day. And Manoah arose and went after his wife and came to the man and said unto him, Art thou the man that speakest unto the woman? And he said, I am. And Manoah said, Now let the words come to pass. How shall we order the child, and how shall we do unto him? And the angel of the Lord said unto Manoah, Of all that I said unto the woman, let her beware. She may not eat of anything that cometh of the vine, neither let her drink wine or strong drink, nor eat any unclean thing. All that I commanded her, let her observe. So Manoah here kind of took it upon himself as the husband here to find out what this man, or as he later comes to understand, was an angel, said to his wife. And he thinks he's going to get some additional information from this person about what they're supposed to do to the child. And the angel tells him, whatever I told your wife, that's what you're supposed to do. Don't allow the child, or while your wife is pregnant, don't let her consume grapes or any unclean meat or any strong drink, so that your child will be pure of those things when he's born, and just do what I told her to do. We'll continue reading starting with verse 15. And Manoah said unto the angel of the Lord, I pray thee, let us detain thee until we shall have made ready a kid for thee. And the angel of the Lord said unto Manoah, Though thou detain me, I will not eat of thy bread, and if thou wilt offer a burnt offering, thou must offer it unto the Lord. For Manoah knew not that he was an angel of the Lord. And Manoah said unto the angel of the Lord, What is thy name, that when thy sayings come to pass, we may do thee honor? And the angel of the Lord said unto him, Why askest thou thus after my name, seeing it is a secret? So Manoah took a kid with a meat offering, and offered it upon a rock unto the Lord. And the angel did wondrously, and Manoah and his wife looked on. For it came to pass, when the flame went up toward heaven from off the altar, that the angel of the Lord ascended into the flame of the altar. And Manoah and his wife looked on it, and fell on their faces to the ground. But the angel of the Lord did not appear to Manoah, but the angel of the Lord did no more appear to Manoah and to his wife. Then Manoah knew that he was an angel of the Lord. And Manoah said unto his wife, We shall surely die, because we have seen God. But his wife said unto him, If the Lord were pleased to kill us, he would not have received a burnt offering and a meat offering at our hands, neither would he have showed us all these things, nor would at this time he have told us such things as these. So, not realizing that this person was an angel, Manoah tried to offer a sacrifice to this person instead of a sacrifice to God. And so, as often was a mistake of people throughout the Old Testament as well as the New Testament, they kind of assumed the wrong thing and they want to start assigning the credit to somebody who doesn't really deserve it. In this case, the angel tries to point out to him, it's like, this: I'm just a messenger. I'm just someone who's sent by God to convey this information to you. And if you want to offer an offering because of this blessing that you're about to receive, the offering needs to be made to God. And so when they saw him ascend up, the angel ascend back up to heaven in the flames of the sacrifice that they offered, they realized that it was, in fact, an angel. And it's kind of interesting that the woman here is the one who seems to know more about what's going on than the man, because Manoah is immediately afraid because he thinks he's seen God, that he's going to die. And his wife reasons with him and tells him if God intended for them to die, he would have just killed them. He wouldn't have done all these things on their behalf. I will finish our study tonight and our reading of this chapter by reading the final two verses, verses 24 and 25 of Judges chapter 13. And a woman bare a son and called his name Samson, and the child grew, and the Lord blessed him, and the Spirit of the Lord began to move him at times in the camp of Dan between Zorah and Eshtaol. The name Samson, the Hebrew word that Samson derives from, is the Hebrew word for sunlight. And as we're going to see, Samson is a man who, like all of us, has flaws. He has trials and temptations that he faces that he sometimes does not overcome. But he has a specific task that God has set him for, and he will fulfill that task as God tends for him to do. But as our time has run out this afternoon, we'll have to save the remainder of the story of Samson for the next time I'm called upon to speak in afternoon service. So that concludes our lesson this afternoon. As always, when we get together to study the Word of God, we don't want to pass up an opportunity to extend the services of the church to those who would. Won't you come while we stand and sing the invitation song?